raided my home and demanded the gold. My gun is upstairs. My dog, once fearsome,
he stroked Radar, who was snoozing beside him,
is now even older than I am. What would I do in such a case?
I guess give it to them?
Exactly so. I wouldn't wish them well, but I'd give it to them.
So I asked it. Where does it come from, Howard?
I may tell you that in time. I haven't made up my mind, because gold isn't just fascinating. It's dangerous. And the place it came from is dangerous. I believe I saw a lamb chop in the fridge. And is there coleslaw? Tiller makes the best coleslaw. You should have some.
In other words, discussion over. 4. One evening in late July, Radar was unable to make it up the back porch steps when we came back from our Pine Street walk. She tried twice, then just sat at the bottom, panting and looking at me.
Go on, pick her up,
Mr. Bowditch said. He'd come out leaning on one crutch. The other had been pretty much retired. I looked at him to make sure, and he nodded.
It's time.
When I picked her up, she yipped and bared her teeth. I slid down the arm, cradling her haunches, trying to get away from the sore spot, and carried her up. It was easy. Radar had grown thin, her muzzle almost pure white, her eyes starting to get rheumy. I put her gently down in the kitchen, and at first her back legs wouldn't hold her. She gathered her resolve, I could see her do it, and limped to her rug near the pantry door, very slowly, and more or less collapsed onto it with a tired woof sound. She needs to go to the vet. Mr. Bowditch shook his head.
She'd be frightened. I won't put her through that to no purpose.
But he spoke gently, which frightened me because it was so unlike him.
No vet can help her. Radar is almost done. For now, she just needs to rest. And I need to think.
About what, for God's sake?
About what's best. You need to go home now. Eat some supper. Don't come back tonight. I'll see you in the morning.
What about your supper?
I'll have sardines and crackers. Go on now.
Then he said it again.
I need to think.
I went home, but I didn't eat much. I wasn't hungry. 5. After that, Radar stopped finishing her morning and evening meals, and although I carried her up the back steps, she could still go down them by herself, there started to be the occasional mess in the house. I knew Mr. Bowditch was right about no vet being able to help her, except maybe at the very end, because it was clear that she was in pain. She slept a lot and sometimes yelped and snapped at her hindquarters as if trying to get rid of whatever was biting her and hurting her. Now I had two patients, one getting better and one getting worse. On the 5th of August, a Monday, I got an email from Coach Montgomery setting out the schedule for football practice. Before replying to it, I did my father the courtesy of telling him I'd decided not to play my final year. Although Dad was clearly disappointed, I was disappointed myself, he said he understood. He had been at Mr. Bowditch's the day before, playing gin, and had seen the condition Radar was in. There's still a lot of work waiting up there, I said. I want to do something about the mess on the third floor, and once I feel safe about letting Howard go down to the basement, there's that jigsaw puzzle that needs finishing. I think he's forgotten all about it. Oh, and I need to teach him how to use my laptop so he can surf the net as well as watch movies. Plus,
quit it, Chip. It's about the dog, right?
I thought about carrying her up those back steps and how ashamed she looked when she messed in the house, and I just couldn't answer.
I had a cocker when I was a kid, Dad said. Penny, her name was. It's hard when a good dog gets old, and when they get to the end of it, he shook his head. It tears your heart out. That was it. That was it exactly. It wasn't my dad who was pissed at the idea of me quitting football my senior year. It was Mr. Bowditch, and he was pissed like a bear.
Are you crazy?
He almost shouted. Color was flaring in his seamed cheeks.
I mean, are you flat-out balls-to-the-wall crazy? You'll be a star on that team. You can play college ball, maybe with a scholarship.
You've never seen me play in your life.
I read the sports pages in the Sun, as crappy as they are. You won the goddamn Turkey Bowl game last year.
We scored 4 touchdowns in that game. I only punched in the last one. He lowered his voice.
I'd come to see your games.
That stunned me to silence. Coming from someone who'd been a voluntary shut-in even before his accident, it was an amazing offer. You can still go, I said finally. I'll go with you. You buy the hot dogs and I'll buy the Cokes.
No, no. I'm your boss, goddammit. I pay your salary, and I forbid it. You're not going to lose your last high school football season on my account.
I do have a temper, although I'd never shown it with him. That day, I did. I think it would be fair to say I snapped.
It's not about you. It's not all about you. What about her?
I pointed to Radar, who raised her head and whined uneasily.
Are you going to carry her up and down the back porch steps so she can piss and shit? You can barely goddamn walk yourself.
He looked shocked.
She can do it in the house. I'll put down papers.
She'd hate that. You know she would. Maybe she's just a dog, but she has her dignity. And if this is her last summer, her last fall...
I could feel tears rising, and you'll only think that's absurd if you never had a dog you loved.
I don't want to be on the practice field hitting a fucking tackling dummy when she passes. I'll go to school, gotta do that, but the rest of the time I want to be here. And if that isn't good enough for you, fire me.
He was quiet, hands folded. When he looked back at me, his lips were pressed together so tightly they almost weren't there. And for a moment, I thought he was going to do just that. Then he said,
Do you think a vet would make a house call and perhaps ignore the fact that my dog hasn't been registered if I paid him enough?
I let out a breath. Why don't I try to find out? 6. It wasn't a vet I found, but a veterinarian's assistant, a single mom with 3 kids. It was Andy Chen who knew her and made the introduction. She came, examined Radar, and gave Mr. Bowditch some pills she said were experimental, but much better than carprofen, stronger.
I want to be clear about these, she told us. They'll improve her quality of life, but they will also probably shorten her life.
She paused.
Certainly shorten it. Don't come to me when she's dead and say I didn't tell you that.
How long will they help? I asked. They may not help at all. I told you, they're experimental. I only have them because they were left over after Dr. Petrie finished a clinical trial for which he was well paid, I might add. Not that I saw any. If they do help, Radar here might get a good month. Maybe 2, probably not 3. She won't exactly feel like a puppy again, but she'll be better. Then, one day. She shrugged, squatted, and stroked Radar's skinny side. Rage thumped her tail. Then one day she'll be gone. If she's still around at Halloween, I'd be very surprised. I didn't know what to say, but Mr. Bowditch did, and Radar was his dog.
Good enough.
Then he added something I didn't understand then, but do now.
Long enough, maybe.
When the woman was gone, $200 to the good, Mr. Bowditch crutched over and stroked his dog. When he looked back at me, he was wearing a small, crooked smile.
No one in authority is going to arrest us for trafficking in illegal dog medicine, are they?
Doubt it, I said. There would be a lot more trouble about the gold if anyone found out about it.
Glad you made the call. I wouldn't have been able to decide.
Hobson's choice.
He was still stroking Radar, long glides of his hand from nape to tail.
In the end, it seems to me that one or two good months are better than six bad ones. If it works at all, that is.
It did work. Radar began to eat all of her chow again, and she could make it up the porch steps, sometimes with a little help from me. Best of all, she was good for a few games of chase the monkey and make him squeak at night. Still, I never expected her to outlive Mr. Bowditch. But she did. 7. Then came what the poets and musicians call a caesura. Radar continued to, well, not improve, I couldn't call it that, but to seem more like the dog I met on the day Mr. Bowditch fell off the ladder, although in the morning she still struggled to get up from her rug and go to her food dish. Mr. Bowditch did improve. He cut back on the oxy and swapped the single armlet crutch he'd been using since August for a cane he found in a corner of the basement. Down there, he was once more working on his jigsaw puzzle. I went to school, I spent time with my dad, I spent even more at 1 Sycamore Street. The Hedgehogs football team started the season 0-3, and my former teammates quit speaking to me. This was a bummer, but I had too much on my mind to let it get me down. Oh, and on several occasions, usually while Mr. Bowditch was napping on the rollout couch, which he was still using to be close to Radar, I opened the safe and plunged my hands into that bucket of gold. Feeling the always surprising weight of it and letting the pellets run through my fingers in little streamlets. At those times, I thought of Mr. Bowditch talking about the fascination of gold. I meditated on it, you could say. Melissa Wilcox now only came twice a week, and she marveled at Mr. Bowditch's progress. She told him Dr. Patterson, the oncologist, wanted to see him, and Mr. Bowditch refused, saying he felt fine. I took him at his word, not because I believed him, but because I wanted to. What I know now is that it isn't just patients who go into denial. A quiet time. A caesura. Then, everything happened almost at once, and none of it was good. 8. I had a free period before lunch, and usually took it in the library, where I might do homework or read one of Mr. Bowditch's gaudy paperbacks. On that late September day, I was deep into The Name of the Game is Death by Dan J. Marlowe, which was splendidly bloody. At 11:45, I decided to save the climax for a binge read that evening and grabbed a newspaper at random. There are computers in the library, but all the papers are paywalled. Besides, I liked the idea of reading the news in an actual newspaper. It felt charmingly retro. I might have picked the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune and missed the story entirely, but the paper on top of the stack was the Elgin Daily Herald, and that was the one I took. The big stories on the front page were about Obama wanting to take military action in Syria and a mass shooting in D.C. that left 13 dead. I scanned them, checked the clock, 10 minutes to lunch, and riffled through the pages on my way to the comics. I never made it that far. A story on the second page of the area news section stopped me. And I mean, cold. Stantonville jeweler homicide victim. A longtime Stantonville resident and businessman was found dead in his shop, Excellent Jewelers, late last night. Police responded to a phone call saying the door to the shop was open, even though the closed sign was still hanging in it. Officer James Kotzewinkel found Wilhelm Heinrich in the back room, the door of which was also open. When asked if the motive was robbery, Stantonville Police Chief William Yardley said, "Although this crime is still being investigated, that would appear to be a no-brainer." When asked if anyone heard sounds of a struggle, or perhaps gunshots, neither Chief Yardley nor Detective Israel Butcher of the Illinois State Police would comment, except to say that most of the businesses at the west end of Stantonville's Main Street have been vacant since the advent of the mall outside of town. Excellent Jewelers was a notable exception. Yardley and Butcher have promised a swift resolution to the case. The lunch bell went, but I sat where I was and called Mr. Bowditch. He answered, as he always did,
"If this is a telemarketer, take me off your list."
"It's me, Howard. Mr. Heinrich has been murdered."
Long pause. Then,
"How do you know?"
I looked around. The library was a no-lunch zone, and now empty except for me, so I read him the article. It didn't take long.
"Damn,"
Mr. Bowditch said when I finished.
"Where am I supposed to trade off the gold now? He's been my go-to for almost 25 years.
No sympathy whatsoever. Not even any surprise, at least that I could detect. "I'll do some internet searches."
"Carefully. Discreetly."
"Sure, I'll be discreet as all hell, but I think you're missing the point here. You did a big deal with him, a huge deal, and now he's dead. If someone got your name out of him, if he was tortured or even promised that he wouldn't be killed?"
"You've been reading too many of my old paperbacks, Charlie. You traded those 6 pounds of gold for me last April."
"Not exactly the Dark Ages," I said. He paid no attention.
"I don't like blaming the victim, but he simply wouldn't leave that shop of his in that saggy-ass little town. The last time I did a deal with him in person, this was probably 4 months before I fell off the ladder, I told him, 'Willie, if you don't shut this place up and move out to the mall, someone is going to rob you.' Someone finally did, and killed him in the bargain. That's your simple explanation."
"Just the same, I'd feel better if you brought your gun downstairs."
"If it'll make you feel better, fine. Are you coming after school?"
"Nah, I thought I'd go out to Stantonville and see if I could score some crack."
"The humor of young people is crude and rarely funny," Mr. Bowditch said, and hung up.
By the time I got in the lunch line, it was a mile long, and whatever slop the calf was serving would probably be cold. I didn't mind. I was thinking about the gold. Mr. Bowditch had said that at his age, it was just a bucket of metal. Maybe so, but I thought he was either lying or being disingenuous. Otherwise, why would he have so much?
9.
That was on Wednesday. I paid for the Elgin newspaper so I could get it on my phone, and on Friday there was another story, this time on the front page of the area news section. Stantonville man arrested in jewelry store robbery murder. The arrestee was identified as Benjamin Dwyer, 44, of no fixed address, which I assumed meant homeless. The proprietor of the Stantonville Pawn and Loan called the cops when Dwyer tried to pawn a diamond ring of considerable value. At the police station, he was also found to be in possession of a bracelet studded with emeralds. The police rightly considered these rather suspicious possessions for a man of no fixed address.
"There, you see," Mr. Bowditch said when I showed him the article. "A stupid man committed a stupid crime and was arrested when he tried to convert his spoils to cash in a stupid way. It wouldn't make a very good mystery story, would it? Even of the paperback quickie type."
"I guess not."
"You still look bothered."
We were in the kitchen, watching Radar eat her evening meal.
"A Coke might cure that."
He got up and went to the refrigerator, hardly limping at all. I took the Coke, but it didn't cure what was bothering me. That back room of his was filled with jewelry. There was even a tiara with diamonds like a princess would wear to a ball. Mr. Bowditch shrugged. To him, it was a closed case, a done deal.
"You're being paranoid, Charlie. The real problem is what to do with some of the gold I still have on hand. Concentrate on that. But..."
"Be discreet, I know."
"Discretion is the better part of valor."
He nodded sagely. "What's that got to do with anything?"
"Not a goddamn thing."
Mr. Bowditch grinned.
"I just felt like saying it."
10.
That night I went on Twitter and searched for Benjamin Dwyer. What I got was a bunch of tweets about an Irish composer, so I changed my search to Dwyer murder suspect. That netted me half a dozen hits. One was from the Stantonville police chief, William Yardley, basically congratulating himself for the quick arrest. Another was from someone who ID'd herself as Punkette44, and like so many on Twitter, she was thoughtful and compassionate.
I grew up in Stantonville. It sucks. That guy Dwyer could murder everybody in it and be doing the world a favor.
But the one that interested me was from BullGuy19. He wrote,
Benji Dwyer, a murder suspect? Don't make me laugh. He's been around Shitsville 1,000 years. Should have Village Idiot tattooed on his forehead.
I thought I'd show that one to Mr. Bowditch the next day and suggest that if BullGuy19 was right, that would make Benji Dwyer the perfect patsy. As it happened, I never got the chance.
Chapter 9. The Thing in the Shed. A Dangerous Place. 911. The Wallet. A Good Conversation. 1.
I no longer had to show up at 6 a.m. to feed Radar. Mr. Bowditch was able to do it himself. But I'd gotten used to rising early, and I usually rode my bike up the hill around 6:45 so I could take her out to do her business. After that, because it was Saturday, I thought we might go for a little stroll along Pine Street, where she always enjoyed reading the messages left on telephone poles and leaving a few of her own. That day, there was no walk. When I came in, Mr. Bowditch was at the kitchen table, eating oatmeal and reading a cinderblock-sized book by James Michener. I got myself a glass of orange juice and asked him how he slept.
Made it through the night,
he said without taking his eyes from his book. Not much of a morning person was Howard Bowditch. Of course, he wasn't much of an evening person either, or noon, for that matter.
Rinse that glass when you're done.
I always do. He grunted and turned a page in his cinder block, which was called Texas. I gulped the rest of my juice and called for Radar, who came into the kitchen, hardly limping at all.
Walkies?
I said.
Ready wanna go walkie walk?
Jesus,
Mr. Bowditch said.
Enough with the baby talk. In human years, she's 98.
Radar was at the door. I opened it, and she picked her way down the back steps. I started to follow her, then remembered I'd need her leash if we were going to walk on Pine Street. Nor had I rinsed my juice glass. I did the glass and was heading for the peg in the front hall, where the leash hung, when Radar started to bark. Harsh and fast and very, very loud. It was the farthest thing from her I see a squirrel bark. Mr. Bowditch snapped his book shut.
What the fuck is up with her? You better go see.
I had a very good idea of what was up with her because I'd heard that sound before. It was her intruder alert bark. She was once more crouched down in the backyard grass, which was now much shorter and mostly poop-free. She was facing the shed, her ears laid back and her muzzle wrinkled to show her teeth. Foam flew from her mouth with each bark. I ran to her and grabbed her collar and tried to pull her back. She didn't want to come, but it was clear she also didn't want to go closer to the locked shed. Even with the fusillade of barks, I could hear that weird scraping, scratching sound. This time it was louder, and I saw the door moving a little. It was like a visible heartbeat. Something was trying to get out.
Radar!
Mr. Bowditch called from the porch.
Get back here, now!
Radar paid no attention, just went on barking. Something inside the shed hit the door hard enough for me to hear the thud, and there was a weird mewling sound, sort of like a cat, but higher in pitch. It was like listening to chalk scream on a blackboard, and my arms hucked up in goose flesh. I got in front of Radar to block her view of the shed and moved at her, making her back up a step or two. Her eyes were wild, showing rings of white, and for a moment I thought she was going to bite me. She didn't. There came another of those thuds, more scratching sounds, then that horrible, high-pitched mewling. Radar had had enough. She turned and fled back to the porch, showing not a single sign of a limp. She scrambled up the steps and huddled at Mr. Bowditch's feet, still barking.
Charlie, get away from there!
Something's inside and trying to get out. It sounds big.
Get back here, boy! You need to get back here!
Another thud. More scratching. I had a hand over my mouth as if to stifle a cry. I don't remember putting it there.
Charlie!
Like Radar, I ran, because as soon as I couldn't see the shed anymore, it was easy to imagine the door busting off its hinges and some nightmare coming after me, skittering and lurching and making those inhuman cries. Mr. Bowditch was wearing his awful Bermuda shorts and his old slippers, which he called scuffs. The healing wounds where the fixator rods had gone into his flesh were very red against his pale skin.
Get inside! Get inside!
But what?
Nothing to worry about. That door will hold, but I need to take care of this.
I came up the steps and was in time to hear what he said next, although he lowered his voice as people do when talking to themselves.
Son of a bitch moved the boards and blocks. Must be a big one.
I heard something like that before when you were in the hospital, but not as loud. He pushed me into the kitchen and then followed, almost tripping over Radar, who was cowering at his feet, then catching himself on the door jamb.
Stay here. I'll take care of this.
He slammed the door to the backyard, then went limping and scuffling and swaying into the living room. Radar followed, her tail drooping. I heard him muttering, then a pained curse followed by a grunt of effort. When he came back, he was carrying the gun I'd asked him to bring downstairs. But not just the gun. It was in a leather holster, and the holster was attached to a leather belt, studded with silver conchos. It looked like something out of Gunfight at the OK Corral. He cinched it around his waist so the holstered revolver rested just below his right hip. Rawhide strings, tie-downs, dangled against his madras shorts. It should have looked ridiculous. He should have looked ridiculous, but it didn't, and he didn't.
Stay in here.
Mr. Bowditch, what? You can't...
Stay in here, goddammit!
He grasped my arm so hard it hurt. He was breathing in quick rasps.
Stay with the dog. I mean it.
He went out, slamming the door behind him, and side-saddled down the steps. Radar bunted her head against my leg, whimpering. I stroked her, distractedly, looking through the glass. Halfway to the shed, Mr. Bowditch reached into his left pocket and brought out his ring of keys. He picked one out and went on. He put the key in the big padlock, then drew the .45. He turned the key and opened the door, pointing the gun at a slight downward angle. I expected something or someone to come bursting out at him, but that didn't happen. I did see movement, something black and thin, then it was gone. Mr. Bowditch stepped into the shed and pulled the door shut behind him. Nothing happened for a long, long time, that actually couldn't have been more than 5 seconds. Then there were two gunshots. The shed walls had to be very thick, because the sounds, which must have been deafening in that enclosed space, came to me as a pair of flat, toneless thuds, like a sledgehammer with its head swaddled in felt. There was nothing for a lot longer than 5 seconds, more like 5 minutes. The only thing that held me was the imperative tone of Mr. Bowditch's voice and the utterly fierce look on his face when he told me to stay in here, goddammit. Finally, though, that couldn't hold me any longer. I was sure something had happened to him. I opened the kitchen door, and just as I stepped out onto the back porch, the door of the shed opened, and Mr. Bowditch came out. Radar bulleted past me, no sign of arthritis then, and cut across the yard to him as he shut the door and snapped the padlock into place. A good thing he did, because it was the only thing that he had to hold on to when Radar jumped up on him.
Down, Radar. Get down.
She went to her belly, tail wagging like mad. Mr. Bowditch came back to the porch much more slowly than he'd gone down to the shed, limping noticeably on his bad leg. One of the scars had broken open and blood was oozing out in dark red beads. They reminded me of the rubies I'd seen in Mr. Heinrich's back room. He had lost one of his scuffs.
Little help, Charlie,
he said.
Fucking legs on fire.
I slung his arm around my neck, grasped his bony wrist, and almost hauled him up the steps and into the house.
Bed. I have to lie down. Can't catch my breath.
I got him into the living room. He lost his other scuff on the way because his feet were dragging, and got him on the rollaway.
Jesus Christ, Howard, what was that? What did you shoot?
Pantry,
he said.
Top shelf. Behind those bottles of Wesson oil. Whiskey. This much.
He held his thumb and forefinger a smidge apart. They were trembling. I had thought he was pale before, but now, with those red spots fading from his cheeks, he looked like a dead man with living eyes. I went into the pantry and found the bottle of Jameson's where he said it would be. Tall as I am, I had to stand on tiptoe to reach it. The bottle was dusty and almost full. Even as wrought up as I was, scared, almost panicked, the smell when I uncapped it brought back vile memories of my father lolling on the couch in a semi-stupor or hung over the toilet retching. Whiskey doesn't smell the same as gin, yet it does. All alcohol smells the same to me, of sadness and loss. I poured a small knock in a juice glass. Mr. Bowditch tossed it down and coughed, but some of the color came back into his cheeks. He unbuckled the gaudy gun belt.
Get this fucking thing off me.
I pulled the holster, and the belt slithered free, Mr. Bowditch giving a muttered,
fuck,
when the buckle must have scraped the small of his back. What do I do with it?
Put it under the bed.
Where did you get the belt? I had certainly never seen it.
At the gettin' place. Just do it. But before you do, reload it.
There were bullet loops on the belt between the conchos. I rolled the big gun cylinder, filled the two empty chambers, holstered the gun, and put it back under the bed. I felt like I was dreaming awake.
What was it? What was in there?
I'll tell you,
he said,
but not today. Nothing to worry about. Take this.
He gave me his key ring.
Put it on that shelf there. Give me two of those oxys, and then I'm going to sleep.
I got him the pills. I didn't like him taking high-tension dope after high-tension whiskey, but it had only been a small knock.
Don't go in there,
he said.
You may in time, but for now, don't even think of it.
Is it where the gold comes from?
That's complicated, as they say on the afternoon soap operas. I can't talk about it now, Charlie, and you must not talk about it to anybody. Anybody. The consequences, I can't even imagine. Promise me.
I promise.
Good. Now go away and let an old man sleep.
2. Radar was usually happy to go down the hill with me, but that Saturday she wouldn't leave Mr. Bowditch's side. I went down solo and fixed myself a deviled ham sandwich on Wonder Bread, the snack of champions. My dad left a note saying he was going to a 9 a.m. AA meeting and bowling with Lindy and a couple of his other sober friends afterward. I was glad. I would have kept my promise to Mr. Bowditch no matter what. The consequences I can't even imagine, he'd said. But I'm pretty sure Dad would have seen something on my face anyway. He was a hell of a lot more sensitive to things like that now that he was sober. Usually that's a good thing. That day, it wouldn't have been. When I got back to number one, Mr. Bowditch was still asleep. He looked a little better, but his breathing had a raspy quality. It was the way he'd sounded when I found him halfway up the porch steps with his leg broken. I didn't like it. By evening, the rasp was gone. I made popcorn, shaking it up old school on the hot point stove. We ate it while watching HUD on my laptop. It was Mr. Bowditch's pick, I'd never heard of it, but it was pretty good. I didn't even mind that it wasn't in color. At one point, Mr. Bowditch asked me to freeze the picture while the camera was close up on Paul Newman.
Was he the handsomest man that ever lived, Charlie? What do you think?
I said he could be right. I stayed Saturday night. On Sunday, Mr. Bowditch seemed better still, so I went fishing with my dad off the South Elgin Dam. We didn't catch anything, but it was nice to be with him in the mellow September sunshine.
You're awful quiet, Charlie, he said on the way back. Anything on your mind?
Just the old dog, I said. This was mostly, but not entirely, a lie.
Bring her down this afternoon, Dad said.
And I tried, but Radar still wouldn't leave Mr. Bowditch.
Go sleep in your own bed tonight,
Mr. Bowditch said.
Me and the old girl'll be fine.
You sound hoarse. Hope you're not coming down with something.
I'm not. Just been talking most of the goddamn day.
To who?
Whom? To myself. Go on, Charlie.
Okay, but call if you need me.
Yes, yes.
Promise. I gave you mine yesterday, now you give me yours.
I promise, for Christ's sake. Now put an egg in your shoe and beat it.
3. On Sunday, Radar was no longer able to climb the back porch steps after doing her morning business, and she only ate half of her food. That night, she ate none of it.
Probably she just needs to rest,
Mr. Bowditch said, but he sounded doubtful.
Double up on those new pills.
Are you sure? I asked. He gave me a bleak smile.
What can it hurt at this point?
I did sleep in my own bed that night, and on Monday, Radar seemed a little better. But Mr. Bowditch had also paid a price for Saturday. He was using his crutches again to get back and forth from the bathroom. I wanted to ditch school and stay with him, but he forbade it. That night, he seemed better, too. Said he was bouncing back. I believed him. More fool me. 4. On Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, I was in advanced chem. We were split into groups of 4, dressed in rubber aprons and gloves, determining the boiling point of acetone. The room was quiet except for murmuring voices, so the sound of my cell phone when it rang in my back pocket was very loud. Mr. Ackerley looked at me with disapproval.
How many times have I told you kids to silence?
I took it from my pocket and saw Bowditch. I dropped my gloves and took the call going out of the room, ignoring whatever Ackerley was saying. Mr. Bowditch sounded strained, but calm.
I believe I'm having a heart attack, Charlie. Actually, I have no doubt.
Did you call?
I called you, so be quiet and listen. There's a lawyer, Leon Braddock, in Elgin. There's a wallet under the bed. Everything else you need is also under the bed. Do you understand that? Under the bed. Take care of Radar. And when you know everything, decide.
He gasped.
Fuck, how that hurts. Like big iron in the forge. When you know everything, decide what you want to do about her.
That was it. He clicked off. The chem room door opened as I was calling 911. Mr. Ackerley came out and asked me what the hell I thought I was doing. I waved him off. The 911 operator asked me what my emergency was. With Mr. Ackerley standing there with his mouth ajar, I told her and gave her the address. I untied my apron and let it fall to the floor. Then I ran for the door. 5. That was probably the fastest bike ride of my life, standing on the pedals and slicing across streets without looking. A horn blared, tires screeched, and someone hollered,
"Watch where you're going, you dumb shit!"
Fast as I was, the ER guys beat me. When I swerved around the corner of Pine and Sycamore, putting one foot down and dragging it on the pavement to keep from wiping out, the ambulance was just pulling away with its lights flashing and its siren whooping. I went around back. Before I could open the kitchen door, Radar bulleted through the dog door and was all over me. I went to my knees to keep her from leaping up and stressing those fragile back hips. She whined and yipped and licked my face. Don't even try to tell me she didn't know something bad had happened. We went inside. A cup of coffee was spilled on the kitchen table, and the chair he always sat in, it's funny how we pick our spots and keep to them, was overturned. The stove was still on, the old-fashioned percolator too hot to touch and smelling charred. Smelling like a chemistry experiment, you could say. I turned off the burner and used an oven mitt to move the percolator to a cold burner. During all this, Radar never left my side, leaning her shoulder against my leg and rubbing her head on my knee. A calendar was lying on the floor beside the entry to the living room. It was easy to imagine what had happened. Mr. Bowditch drinking coffee at the kitchen table, the percolator staying hot on the stove for a second cup. A hammer hits his chest. He spills his coffee. His landline is in the living room. He gets up and goes in there, knocking over his chair, staggering once and pulling the calendar off the wall as he braces himself. The retro phone was on the bed. There was also a wrapper that said papaverine, something they had injected before transporting him, I supposed. I sat on the rumpled rollaway, stroking Radar and scratching behind her ears, which always seemed to calm her. He'll be okay, girl. Wait and see, he'll be fine. But in case he wasn't, I looked under the bed, where, according to Mr. Bowditch, I'd find everything I needed. There was the holstered gun on its concho-studded belt. There was his key ring and a wallet I'd never seen before. And there was an old-fashioned cassette tape recorder that I had seen, perched atop one of the plastic milk crates of rickrack on the third floor. I looked in the recorder's window and saw there was a Radio Shack cassette in the machine. Either he had been listening to something or recording something. My money was on recording. I put the key ring in one pocket and the wallet in another. I would have put the wallet in my backpack, but it was still at school. I took the rest of the stuff upstairs and put it in the safe. Before closing the door and spinning the combination, I went to one knee and plunged my hands wrist deep in those gold pellets. As I let them sift through my fingers, I wondered what would happen to them if Mr. Bowditch died. Radar was whining and barking from the foot of the stairs. I went down, sat on the rollaway, and called my dad. I told him what had happened. Dad asked how he was. I don't know, I didn't see him. I'm going to the hospital now. Halfway across the goddamn bridge, my phone rang. I pulled into the Zipmart parking lot and took the call. It was Melissa Wilcox. She was crying.
He died on the way to the hospital, Charlie. They tried to revive him, they tried everything. But the infarction was too bad. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I said I was too. I looked at the window of the Zipmart. The sign there was the same. A heaped plate of fried chicken that was the best in the land. The tears came and the words blurred. Mrs. Zippy saw me and came out.
Everything all right, Charlie?
No, I said. Not really. There was no point in going to the hospital now. I pedaled back across the bridge and then walked my bike up Sycamore Street Hill. I was too pooped to ride, especially not up that steep grade. I stopped outside our house, but that house was empty and would be until my father got home. Meanwhile, there was a dog that needed me. I guessed she really was my dog now. 6. When I got back to Mr. Bowditch's house, I spent some time petting Radar. I cried while I did it, partly from shock, but also because it was sinking in. There was a hole where I'd had a friend. The stroking soothed her, and it did the same for me, I guess, because I began to think. I called Melissa back and asked if there would be an autopsy. She told me there wouldn't be because he hadn't died unattended and the cause was clear.
The coroner will write out a death certificate, but he'll need some ID. Do you have his wallet by any chance?
Well, I had a wallet. It wasn't the same as the one Mr. Bowditch carried in his hip pocket. That one was brown, and the one I'd found under the bed was black. But I didn't tell Melissa that. I just said I had it. She said there was no rush. We all knew who he was. I was starting to wonder about that. I Googled Leon Braddock's number and called him. The conversation was short. Braddock said that all of Mr. Bowditch's affairs were in order because he had not expected to live long.
He said he didn't intend to buy any green bananas. I thought that was charming.
The cancer, I thought. That was why he put his affairs in order. That was what he expected to get him, not a heart attack. Did he come to your office? I asked.
He did, earlier this month.
When I was in school, in other words, and he hadn't told me anything about it.
I bet he took a Uber.
Beg pardon?
Nothing. Melissa, his physical therapist, says someone, the coroner, I guess, needs to see ID for the death certificate?
Yes, yes. Just a formality. If you take it to the hospital's front desk, they'll make a photocopy.
Driver's license, if he still has one. Even an expired one would do, I think. Something with a picture. Not a rush. They'll release the body to the funeral home without it. I don't suppose you have any idea which funeral home?
Crosland, I said. It was the one my mother was buried out of. Right here in Century?
Very good. Very good. I'll take care of the expenses. He left money in escrow for just such a sad eventuality. Please tell me what the arrangements are. Perhaps your parents can take care of that. I want to see you afterward, Mr. Reed.
Me? Why?
I'll tell you when I see you. It will be a good conversation, I think.
7. I gathered up Radar's food, dish, and meds. There was no way I was going to leave her in that house where she'd wait for her master to come back from wherever he'd gone. I clipped her leash to her collar and walked her down the hill. She went slowly but steadily and mounted our porch steps with no trouble. She knew the place now and went immediately to her water dish. Then she lay down on her rug and went to sleep. Dad came home shortly after noon. I don't know what he saw on my face, but he took one look and pulled me into a strong hug. I started crying again, this time a real flood. He cupped the back of my head and rocked me as if I were still a little boy, and that made me cry even harder. When the waterworks finally stopped, he asked if I was hungry. I said I was, and he scrambled half a dozen eggs, throwing in handfuls of onions and peppers. We ate, and I told him what had happened. But there was plenty I didn't tell him about. The pistol, the noises in the shed, the bucket of gold in the safe. I didn't show him the key ring, either. I thought I might come clean soon, and he'd probably give me hell for holding back. But I was going to keep the crazy stuff to myself until I listened to that cassette tape. I did show him the wallet. In the billfold were $5 bills of a sort I'd never seen before. Dad said they were silver certificates, not all that rare, but as retro as Mr. Bowditch's TV and hot point stove. There were also 3 items of identification. A social security card made out to Howard A. Bowditch, a laminated card declaring Howard A. Bowditch was a member of the American Woodsman's Association, and a driver's license. I looked at the photo on the Woodsman's Association card with fascination. In it, Mr. Bowditch looked about 35, surely no older than 40. He had a full head of blazing red hair, combed back from his unlined forehead in neat waves, and he was wearing a cocky grin I'd never seen. Smiles, yes, even a grin or two, but nothing this carefree. He was wearing a plaid flannel shirt, and he certainly looked like a woodsy type guy. A simple woodcutter, he'd said to me not all that long ago. The fairy tales are full of them.
This is really, really good, my dad said.
I looked up from the card I was holding. What is?
This.
He passed me the driver's license, which showed Mr. Bowditch at 60 or so. He still had plenty of red hair, but it was thinning and fighting a losing battle against the white. The license had been good until 1996, according to what was printed below his name, but we knew better. Dad had checked online. Mr. Bowditch had a car somewhere, but had never held a valid Illinois driver's license, which was what this purported to be. I guessed Mr. Heinrich might have known someone who could create fake DLs.
Why? I asked. Why would he?
Maybe lots of reasons. But I think he must have known a valid death certificate couldn't be issued without at least some identification.
Dad shook his head, not with irritation, but admiration.
This, Charlie, was burial insurance.
What should we do about it?
Roll with it. He had secrets, I'm sure, but I don't think he ever robbed banks in Arkansas or shot up a bar in Nashville. He was good to you and good to his dog, and that's good enough for me. I believe he should be buried with his little secrets, unless his lawyer knows them. Or do you think differently?
I don't. What I was thinking was that he'd had secrets, all right, but not little. unless you considered a fortune in gold little, that was. And there was something in his shed. Or had been, until he shot it. 8. Howard Adrian Bowditch was laid to rest just 2 days later, on Thursday, the 26th of September, 2013. The service took place at the Crossland Funeral Home, and he was buried at Century's Rest Cemetery, my mother's final resting place. Reverend Alice Parker conducted a non-sectarian service at my father's request. She had also officiated at my mother's service. Reverend Alice kept it short, but even so, I had plenty of time to think. Some of it was about the gold, but more of it was about the shed. He had shot something in there, and the excitement killed him. It took a little while, but I was sure that had done it. Present at the funeral parlor service and at the cemetery were George Reed, Charles Reed, Melissa Wilcox, Mrs. Althea Richland, a lawyer named Leon Braddock, and Radar, who slept through the funeral service and spoke up just once, at graveside, a howl, as the coffin was lowered into the ground. I'm sure that sounds both sentimental and unbelievable. All I can say is it happened. Melissa gave me a hug and a kiss on the cheek. She told me to call her if I wanted to talk, and I said I would. I returned to the parking lot with Dad and the lawyer. Radar walked slowly beside me. Braddock's Lincoln was parked next to our humble Chevy Caprice. There was a nearby bench in the shade of an oak whose leaves were going gold.
"Perhaps we could sit here for a few moments?" Braddock asked. "I have something rather important to tell you."
"Wait," I said. "Keep walking." I had my eyes on Mrs. Richland, who had turned to look just as she always had on Sycamore Street, with one hand raised to shade her eyes. When she saw we were going to the cars, or appearing to, she got into hers and drove away. "Now we can sit down," I said.
"I take it that lady is the curious type," Braddock said. "Did she know him?"
"No, but Mr. Bowditch said she was a nosy Parker, and he was right." We sat on the bench. Mr. Braddock hoisted his briefcase onto his lap and unlatched it.
"I said we'd have a good conversation, and I believe you'll agree when you hear what I have to tell you."
He took out a folder, and from the folder a small sheaf of papers, held with a gold clip. At the head of the one on top were the words, "Last Will and Testament." My dad began to laugh.
"Oh my God, he left something to Charlie?"
"Not quite correct," Braddock said. "He left everything to Charlie." I said the first thing that came to mind, which wasn't exactly polite.
"You're shitting me."
Braddock smiled and shook his head.
"This is nullum cacestatum, as we lawyers say. A no-shit situation. He left you the house and the land it stands upon. Quite a piece of land, as it happens. Worth at least six figures, high six figures, given Century's Rest property values. Everything in the house is also yours, plus a car currently in storage in the town of Carpentersville. And the dog, of course."
He bent and stroked Radar. She looked up briefly, then put her head back on her paw.
"This is really true?" Dad asked.
"Lawyers never lie," Braddock said, then rethought what he'd said.
"At least, they don't in matters such as this."
"And there are no relatives to contest it?"
"We'll find that out when the will goes through probate, but he claimed to have none."
Is it still okay for me to go inside?" I asked. "I mean, I have a bunch of stuff there, mostly clothes, but also, I couldn't think what else I had at number one. All I could think about was what Mr. Bowditch had done one day earlier that month while I was in school. He might have changed my life while I was taking a history quiz or shooting hoops in the gym. It wasn't the gold I was thinking about just then, or the shed, or the gun, or the cassette tape. I was only trying to get my head around the fact that I now owned, or soon would, the top of Sycamore Street Hill. And why? Just because I'd heard Radar howling in the backyard of what kids called the Psycho House one chilly April afternoon?
Meanwhile, the lawyer was talking. I had to ask him to rewind.
I said, of course, you can go in. It's yours, after all, lock, stock, and barrel. At least it will be, once the will is probated.
He put the will back in the folder, put the folder back in his briefcase, snapped the catches, and stood. From his pocket, he fished a business card and gave it to my father. Then, perhaps remembering that Dad wasn't the named legatee of a property worth six figures, high six figures, he gave another one to me.
Call if you have questions, and of course I will be in touch. I'll ask that the probate process be expedited, but it still may take as long as 6 months. Congratulations, young man.
Dad and I shook hands with him and watched him go to his Lincoln. My father isn't ordinarily a cussing man, unlike Mr. Bowditch, who is apt to drop a goddamn into pass the salt. But as we sat there on that bench, still too stunned to get up, he made an exception.
Holy fuck.
Right? I said.
9.
When we got home, Dad brought two Cokes from the fridge. We clinked cans.
How do you feel, Charlie?
I don't know. I can't get my head around it.
Do you think he has anything in the bank, or did the hospital stay clean him out?
I don't know.
But I did. Not much in Citizens, maybe a couple of thousand, but there was the bucket of gold upstairs, and maybe more in the shed, along with whatever else was in there.
It doesn't really matter, Dad said. That property is golden.
Golden. Right.
If this proves out, your college expenses are taken care of.
He let out a long sigh, pursing his lips so it made a sound.
I feel like a 90-pound weight just slid off my back.
Assuming we sell it, I said. He gave me an odd look.
Are you telling me you want to keep it? Do a Norman Bates and live in the psycho house?
It doesn't look like the Haunted Mansion anymore, Dad.
I know, you really spiffed it up.
Got a ways to go. I was hoping to get the whole thing painted before winter. He was still giving me the odd look, head cocked, slight frown creasing his brow.
It's the land that's valuable, Chip, not the house.
I wanted to argue. The idea of demolishing number one sycamore gave me the horrors, not because of the secrets it contained, but because so much of Mr. Bowditch was still in there. But I didn't. There was no point, because there was no money for a full-on paint job anyway. Not with the will and probate, and no way to convert the gold to cash. I finished my Coke. I want to go up there and get my clothes. Can Raid stay here with you?
Sure. Guess she'll be staying here from now on, won't she? At least until...
He didn't finish, just shrugged.
Sure, I said. Until...
10. The first thing I noticed was that the gate was open. I thought I'd shut it, but couldn't remember for sure. I went around the house, started up the back steps, and stopped on the second one. The kitchen door was open, and I knew I'd close that one. Closed it and locked it. I went the rest of the way up and saw I'd locked it all right. Splinters were sticking out all around the lock plate, which had been partly torn from the jamb. I didn't consider that whoever had broken in might still be there. For the second time that day, I was too stunned to consider very much. The only thing I remember thinking was being glad I'd left Radar at our house. She was too old and fragile for more excitement. Chapter 10. Wreckage. Mrs. Richland. Obit Thieves. The Tale of the Tape. Inside the Shed. The Tale of the Tape continued. 1. All the kitchen cupboards had been opened, and the pots and pans had been scattered across the linoleum, held a breakfast. The hot point had been pulled away from the wall, and the oven door was open. The contents of the canisters, sugar, flour, coffee, cookies, had been spilled across the counter, but the one that had contained money no longer did. And the first coherent thought to cross my mind was, fucker didn't get it. I'd put the cash and the little gold pellets in the safe months ago. In the living room, The rollaway bed, now turned into a couch again with Mr. Bowditch no longer needing it, had been overturned and the cushions slashed. Same with Mr. Bowditch's easy chair. The stuffing was everywhere. Upstairs was worse. I wouldn't need to open my dresser to get my clothes because they were scattered all over the room I'd been using. My pillows had been slashed, ditto mattress. It was the same in the master bedroom, only there the wallpaper had also been slashed and hung in great long strips. The closet door stood open, and with the clothes heaped on the floor, the pockets of the pants had been turned out, the safe stood revealed. There were scratches along the seam by the handle, and more on the combination dial, but the safe had stood strong against the thief's attempts to break in. Just to be sure, I ran the combo and opened it. Everything was still there. I closed it, gave the dial a spin, and went downstairs. There, sitting on the couch where Mr. Bowditch had slept, I called 911 for the third time that year. Then I called my father. 2. I realized there was one thing I needed to do before Dad came, and certainly before the police arrived. If I intended to lie, that was, and have the lie stand up. I took care of that, then went outside to wait. My father drove up the hill and parked at the curb. He hadn't brought Radar, and I was glad of that. The destruction of the house would have upset her more than she was already by the recent changes in her life. Dad walked through the downstairs, surveying the destruction. I stayed in the kitchen, picking up the pots and pans and putting them away. When he came back, he helped me move the stove back against the wall. "Holy crow, Charlie. What do you think?" I told him I didn't know, but I thought I did. I just didn't know who. "Will you wait here for the police, Dad? I'm going across the street for a minute. Mrs. Richland's back. I saw her car. I want to talk to her."
"The nosy Parker?"
"That's her."
"Shouldn't you leave it for the cops?"
"If she's seen anything, I'll tell them to talk to her."
"Doesn't seem likely. She was at the funeral with us."
"I still want to talk to her. Maybe she saw something before."
"Guys casing the joint?"
"Maybe." I didn't need to knock on her door. She was at her usual post at the end of the driveway.
"Hello, Charlie. Is everything all right? Your father was certainly in a hurry. And where's the dog?"
"At my house. Mrs. Richland, someone broke into Mr. Bowditch's while we were at the funeral and kind of trashed the place."
"Oh my God, really?"
She put her hand to her chest. "Did you see anyone before? Like in the last couple of days? Someone who didn't belong on the street?" She considered.
"Gee, I don't think so. Just the usual delivery men. You know, Federal Express, UPS. The man who comes around to do things to the Houghton's lawn."
"That must cost a pretty penny."
"The postman in his little truck." "How bad is the damage? Was anything stolen?"
"I really don't know much yet. The police might want to
talk to me." "Of course, happy to. But if it happened while we were at the funeral..."
"Yeah, I know. Thanks anyway." I turned to go.
"There was that funny little man selling magazine subscriptions," she said. "But that was before Mr. Bowditch died."
I turned back. "Really?"
"Yes, you would have been in school. He had a satchel like the kind postmen used to carry in the old days. It had a sticker on it that said Subscription Service of America. I think that was it. And samples inside, Time, Newsweek, Vogue, some others. I told him I didn't want any magazines, that I read everything I want online. It's so much more convenient that way, isn't it? Also more ecological, without all that paper to dispose of in landfills."
I wasn't interested in the environmental advantages of online reading.
"Did he go to other houses on the street?" Feeling that if anyone could answer that question, it would be her.
"Quite a few. I believe he went to Mr. Bowditch's house, but the old fellow didn't come to the door, probably feeling too poorly. Or... I don't think he liked visitors much, did he? I'm so glad you made friends with him. So sad he's gone on. When it's animals, people say they've crossed the rainbow bridge. I like that, don't you?"
Yes, that's pretty nice. I hated it.
I suppose his dog will be crossing the Rainbow Bridge soon. Poor thing has gotten so thin and white around the muzzle. Will you keep him?
Radar? Sure. I didn't bother telling her Radar was a female.
What did the magazine salesman look like?
Oh, just a funny little man with a funny way of walking and talking.
He walked with a kind of a skip, almost like a child. And when I told him I didn't want any magazines, he said, "Right-o," like he was from England.
But really, he sounded as American as you or me.
Do you think he was the one who broke in? He certainly didn't look dangerous. Just a funny little man with a funny way of talking. He said, "Ha-ha," a lot.
Ha-ha?
Yes. Not a real laugh, just ha-ha. 70% off the newsstand price, ma'am. Ha-ha. And he was little for a man, my height. Do you think he was the one?
Probably not, I said.
He was wearing a White Sox cap, I remember that, and corduroy pants. The cap had a red circle on the front.
3. I was all for starting a global cleanup, but Dad said we should wait for the police. They'll probably want to document the scene. They showed up 10 minutes or so later, in a squad car and an unmarked sedan. The guy driving the sedan had white hair and was carrying a considerable paunch. He introduced himself as Detective Gleason and the two uniformed cops as Officers Whitmark and Cooper. Whitmark had a camcorder. Cooper had a little case like a lunchbox, which I presumed contained evidence-collecting shit. Detective Gleason surveyed the damage with a marked lack of interest, flapping back his checked sport coat like wings every now and then to hitch up his pants. I guessed he couldn't be more than a year or two from getting a gold watch or a fishing rod at his retirement party. Meanwhile, he was serving out his time. He directed Whitmark to roll video of the living room and sent Cooper upstairs. He asked us a few questions, directing them at Dad, although I was the one who had discovered the break-in, and jotted our answers down in a little notebook. He snapped the notebook closed, stuffed it in the inside pocket of his sport coat, and hitched up his pants.
"Obit thieves. Seen it 100 times.
"What are those?" I asked. Glancing at my dad, I could see he already knew. Maybe had from the moment he stepped in and looked around.
"When was his death notice in the paper?"
"Yesterday," I said. "His physical therapist got the form for the newspaper pretty soon after he died, and I helped her fill in the blanks." Gleason nodded.
Yep, seen it 100 times. These ghouls read the paper, find out when the services are going to be, and the house will be empty. They break in, grab anything that looks valuable. You'll want to look around, make a list of what's missing, and bring it to the station.
What about fingerprints?
Dad asked. Gleason shrugged.
They will have worn gloves. Everybody watches the cop shows these days, especially the perps. Cases like this, we usually don't.
Lieutenant!
That was Cooper from upstairs.
Got a safe up in the master bedroom.
Ah, well, now we're talking, Gleason said.
We went upstairs with Gleason leading the way. He went slowly, sort of hauling himself along by the banister, and at the top he was puffing and flushed. He hitched his pants and went into Mr. Bowditch's bedroom. There, he bent to look at the safe.
Ah, someone tried and failed.
I could have told him that. Whitmark, the department's resident cinematographer, I guess, came in and started rolling video.
Dust it, Loot?
Cooper asked. He was already opening his little lunchbox.
We might get lucky here,
the detective, I used the word with hesitation, told us.
The guy might have taken off his gloves to try the combo when he saw he couldn't force it.
Cooper dusted black powder over the front of the safe. Some stuck, more drifted to the floor. Another mess for me to clean up. Cooper looked at his handiwork, then stood aside so Gleason could look.
Wipe clean,
he said, straightening up and giving his pants a particularly violent hitch. Of course it was wiped clean. I had done it myself after calling 911. The robber might have left his fingerprints, but even if he did, they still had to go, because mine were there too.
Don't suppose you know the combination, by any chance?
This was also directed to my father.
I haven't even been in this room before today.
Ask Charlie. He was the old guy's caretaker. Caretaker? The word was accurate enough, but it still struck me funny. I think because it was a word almost always applied to adults. No idea, I said.
Huh.
Gleason bent to the safe again, but briefly, as if it had ceased to interest him.
Whoever inherits this pile will have to get a locksmith in here. If that doesn't work, a box peeler is good with nitro. I know of a couple in the jug at Stateville.
He laughed.
Probably nothing much. Old papers and maybe some cufflinks. Remember that big kerfuffle over Al Capone's safe? Geraldo Rivera sure got egg on his face with that one. Oh, well. Come down to the station and make a full report, Mr. Reed.
Again, talking to my dad. Sometimes I totally understand why women get pissed off. 4. I spent the night in our little guest room on the ground floor. It was my mother's home office and sewing room when she was alive. And that was how it stayed during my dad's drinking years, kind of like a museum. When he was sober 6 months or so, Dad turned it into a bedroom, with my help. Sometimes Lindy stayed over there, and a couple times newly sober guys Dad was working with, because that's what AAs are supposed to do. I used it the night of Mr. Bowditch's funeral and the break-in at his house, so Radar wouldn't have to try the stairs. I put down a blanket for her, and she went to sleep at once, curled up nose to tail. I was awake longer, because the bed in there was too short for a guy 6'4", but also because I had a lot to think about. Before I turned out the light, I Googled Subscription Service of America. There was such a company, but it was services, plural. Of course, it was only one letter, and Mrs. Richland might have made a mistake about that, but the one I found was a consolidation outfit, strictly online, no